Infinite Waters Radio. Diving deep, leaving no stone unturned, elevating the soul, exploring the mind, question everything. We are the future.
Once again, thank you for diving with us into Infinite Waters. I'm your host, Ralph Smart, and we have a very, very special guest today. This guest doesn't need any introduction. We have Lennon Honor joining us once again. And Lennon Honor is a husband, father, radio host, musician, researcher, filmmaker, and we're going to really be piercing the veil. Lennon just actually released his latest film project called The Borg Agenda, 7 of 9, Part 7, Water, Space, and Time. So without further ado, we're going to see if Lennon is on the line to talk with us. Lennon, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I'm so happy to be back with you once again.
Great to be diving with you, and much serenity to you and your family. You've been doing this for a long time, Lennon. You've been doing this for years, a couple of years now, and really every film I see of yours is just opening my mind more and more. Please, for those that may not be familiar with the Borg Agenda series, just give a brief introduction about the topics included within the Borg Agenda series, and particularly this present one, Part 7, Water, Space, and Time.
Oh, sure. And the Borg Agenda 7 of 9 and the Sexualization of Technology is an ongoing documentary series. It's over 14 hours in length so far. And we start off, if I recall, it's been so long. It started off with a more of a, I guess we can say, a spiritual context and dealing with concepts related to the human species' ability to travel space and time, and how DNA plays a major role as it relates to the information that is encoded within each and every one of us that enables us to be empowered to actualize certain things, including being able to travel space and time through the power of our mind. And it starts there, and it begins to ask questions about space and what is space, and why is it that so many of us have such a why are we so compelled by the concept of space travel? And it starts there, but then it begins to unfold and gets into other concepts. One of the major themes that I present early on is transhumanism. And transhumanism is basically an ideal that states that in order for the human species to evolve to its greater capacity, it must embrace technology in extreme ways, and that it is through technology that the human species will find its true humanity and true greatness. And this ties back to the earlier concept in terms of us as spiritual beings, where in point of fact, technology has been perceived to be a almost like a mechanism of spirituality, where in fact all spirituality resides internally in the first place, and the external, meaning the technological advances that are made, in many cases stifle the creative aspects of the human being, and therefore stifle our ability to be spiritual beings here on planet Earth. So it begins there, but then I get into Star Trek, and I talk about how the concept of transhumanism is propagandized in Star Trek, and how technology is in fact sexualized as a means of subliminal manipulation and psychosexual manipulation of the population so as to garner support for the concept of transhumanism. All of this being done subconsciously, all of this being done subliminally. And so many people have been led along a course to where they perceive technology to be almost like their God being. Technology is the mechanism through which they come into their spirituality, or they come into their spiritual height, or they come into the evolution of the human species here on planet Earth, this biological entity that we call the human being, its evolution into spiritual ascendancy and so forth and so on. And the Borg Agenda series, again, it's over, I think it's about 14 hours long. So there's so many different other topics that I discuss. I also get into decoding the subliminal aspects presented within the Borg, within Star Trek, the Next Generation, actually Star Trek Voyager, dealing with a character called Seven of Nine. Later on, I get into, I guess I can bring it to where I'm at now. Later on, I get into the Star Trek universe, especially as it relates to the concept of space being a symbolic representation of water. And this sets up a very fascinating dynamic, because when we really take a critical look at what's taking place in Star Trek, you have starships that travel space. And these starships are seeking out new life, new civilizations, et cetera. In the process, what we find is that if we take the analogy, if we look at space as being a symbolic representation of water, what we really find is that these spacefaring vessels are actually symbolic representations of seafaring vessels. And so, therefore, these seafaring vessels are actually traveling water in search of new life, new civilizations, and in point of fact, as a means of colonization. And this is where
right.
The Borg Agenda Part 7, Water, Space, and Time, picks up, because in point of fact, the Star Trek universe is basically retelling historical events related to enslavement, African enslavement, the enslavement of indigenous peoples. It's related to Admiralty Law, related to ships traveling water, but just set in the distant future. And what we find is that the futuristic telling of enslavement, not just of African people or indigenous people, but of all of humanity, set in a distant future. And this is precisely the subliminal implications, or the subliminal storyline that is being presented within the Star Trek universe.
Well, a lot of your work covers the age of manipulation, the subliminal programming that we find ourselves in. Living in London, you can't help but notice the advertisements on buses, on tubes. It's almost a battle for the hearts and minds of the people, and a lot of your work shows what's hidden in plain sight. When I was actually watching the Borg Agenda Part 7, Water, Space, and Time, you really showed a lot of things which I really had seen, because I watched Star Trek when I was younger, but I just never actually saw Star Trek in that way. I just thought it was just a kind of fictional story, and that's it. But when one delves deeper, one realizes that these writers, they're not stupid. They definitely have a large encyclopedia of world history. And you start your part 7 with one of the greatest illusions ever propagandized so as to divide and disempower the human species, and you're referring to race. And you say in the 1300s, race means contest of speed, the act of running. How has race changed in its definition from the 1300s to the present day, 2011?
Oh, wow. This is what I mean. See, the concept of colonization, most people perceive it to be a race-based concept. And many of us, we perceive it to be a concept that's exclusively tied to enslavement, more specifically African enslavement. But the reality is that we are not living in the 1400s. We are not living in the 1500s. We're not living in the 1600s, 1700s. We are actually living in 2011. And the truth of the matter is that colonization nowadays, it has little to do with the physicality of our existence. It has little to do with our bodies, per se. It has little to do with the concept of race as it appears in 2011. It has to do with the colonization of the mind. This colonization of the mind sets up a dynamic wherein we are led to accept certain concepts and ideas that literally divide the human species. Part of enslavement, in order to enslave a group of people, it doesn't really necessarily mean that are of the same color or the same culture, but it can be. You can look at it on a planetary level. In order to enslave the minds of a group of people, you must have them buy into certain concepts. And one of the concepts that has been used is the concept of race. And it is a concept. It's not a truth. It's not backed by scientific evidence or proof. And if you ask the average person, if you say, what is race? They won't be able to give you a definite definition outside of it's something that you do in competition. You know, you're a running race. Mm. That's what you do.
Right.
What has taken place throughout time is that the morphing of this concept of race from being a term that was used, and you can look into the etymology of this as well. You see the transformation of the concept of race going from something that is basically put within the context of a sporting event or a competition amongst, you know, individuals, more specifically a running race, to race being a means of classifying and really dividing the human species along particular physiological or physical traits. Some say, you know, genetic traits, but it's much more complex than genetics. That's a whole nother, space to kind of delve into. But the fact of the matter is that the reasoning as to why race was transformed and was used as a means of dividing humanity was to legitimize the enslavement, and more specifically, the enslavement of African people. See, in order to enslave a group of people, you have to demonize those people, and you must be able to have a large body of your peers perceive those individuals that you are going to enslave to be outside of you, outside of your species, if you will. You know, because the concept of race, many people, they perceive it to be a concept dealing with the human species, as if to say that there are many different human species out there. No, there's just one species. But what has happened is the transformation of the concept of race as a means of dividing, classification, but really simplification and dividing the human species along certain lines. And as you divide, with each division, you disempower, and then you also set up a situation where now you have individuals who are in competition with each other. That's why the concept of race being a competition and a race. Well, now it's a genetic based competition, which is precisely what African enslavement was about. In order to legitimize that inside people's mind, the enslavement of millions of people, you have to get a population to a point where they begin to perceive other folk as being outside of themselves, as being less than they are within the scope of the genetic race. These individuals are inferior, therefore you are superior, therefore you can legitimize the enslavement of these people. And this comes out of the Pope. This comes out of Rome. This comes out of the Vatican. So what we find is that the transformation of the term is actually in part related to the Vatican in terms of its legitimization of the African slave trade and many other forms of slavery throughout, you know, centuries now. So one of the things I want to point out inside this particular the book in the part 7a is that the concept of race, It has been transformed as a means of domination and control, and really to disempower and to divide the human species along certain fanciful lines that are not rooted in truth. The concept of race is just a concept. It's not a truth.
Right, right. Well, so many of us are so busy that it's so easy just to get swept along in the tide and just to sort of believe anything you read in the newspaper. But what was your main goal for the part 7? Was that your main goal just to explore this fake concept of race, or did you want to also show something else?
Well, the main reason why I present that early on is because as I get into the actual film, I want it to be clear to people that I do not prescribe to the notion of race. It's an illusion.
Right.
It's a distraction. It's one of the major distractions that has been given to the human species. And one of the concepts that I talk about is the ascendancy of this human species back into the realm of cosmic respectability. This cannot take place within the application of the concept of race. And the reason why is because inherent in race, you can't have the concept of race without having the concept of someone being better than and someone being worse than. Because intrinsic within the word, the concept of race as it is epitomized here in 2011 and the transformation of it, over time, in the 1300s. This transformation, it really stems from this notion that we are in competition with each other genetically, and therefore there is someone who's going to win the race in the end. That person is perceived to be superior, and the person who loses, they are to be inferior. So you cannot have the concept of race without having attached to it the concept of racial superiority and racial inferiority. And I want to make it absolutely clear to everyone, especially in the beginning of Part 7-8, that I don't prescribe to the concept of race. It's an illusion. Its foundation is flawed. It is merely a concept. It is not a truth. And in order to set a proper platform for what I discuss inside the film in terms of the application of the enslavement of indigenous populations subliminally coming through the Star Trek television series, and I had to make it very clear to people in the first place that I do not prescribe to the concept of race, because otherwise what would have happened would have been people would have assumed that I'm coming from a race-based perspective, and I want everyone to say right. Absolutely not. The concept of race is an absolute illusion.
Right. Well, because in Part 7 you also tied in Roots, which is, you know, one of the most watched television series. I think it had something like 37 million households in America were watching that, probably even more than that. In fact, when I was working in a school, they were still showing that was in Christmas time. So it's still in the curriculum here in the UK, you know. But you were linking in Roots there, and I found that really interesting, because that was a novel by Alex Haley.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk of Roots, if from your own perspective, why do you feel this film was made? Because there's always a reason behind yes. the film being made. This scale, this wasn't no low budget film. This film is still in circulation. In fact, it's still in the curriculum in the UK in schools. If you go in schools, that's what they're watching Roots. Why do you feel so much money was put, you know, because when I watch Roots, it's very difficult to see what were the true intentions of the directors, because someone must have financed this massive project. So what do you feel the intentions of the film were from the directors? And, you know, do you know anything about how it was financed?
Yeah, I'm not sure who financed, but I can tell you in terms of the impact that it has had. And in terms of the impact, this, you know, no film is created without intent, especially nowadays, and Roots included, because especially during that time, you didn't see films that were coming out that was dealing specifically with a quote-unquote African experience or a quote-unquote African-American experience. It was quite rare. And point in fact, that particular film, it's probably one of the more popularized films dealing with quote-unquote black people that has ever existed. You know,
right.
So even the terminology that we use when we say black, you know, colored, Negro, whatever, this all has implications in terms of the subjugation of people and the divisions and the various degrees of division and status and so forth and sovereignty. There's all these different dynamics that are tied up to this. But in terms of the intent, many people found the film Roots to be empowering to them. But I will propose to you that it only, you know, the sense of empowerment that people get is going to be directly related to where they are at in the moment. And just because you feel a little bit empowered in the moment doesn't mean that you are actually empowered. It just means that maybe you are progressing towards a state of empowerment. Right. So it's always going to be relative. If someone gives you a meal and maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's McDonald's. But before that, you were eating out of the garbage can. You might perceive McDonald's food to be a little bit more healthy. So, OK, I'm more empowered. Okay, I understand that, right? That's interesting. However, the truth is that in terms of your ultimate empowerment in this case, and use this as an analogy, you want to get to the point where you're eating even more healthier than that. So in terms of Roots, in terms of its application to the consciousness, and really on the consciousness on a global scale, it functioned in terms of the intent. There was quite a few things. One was to maintain the notion that African people, the beginning of their existence on planet Earth stems from slavery. More specifically, African American people, Africans here in America, mainly because in terms of the storyline, that's where they go. This isn't, they don't talk about, you know, the African slave trade in terms of slaves that were taken, you know, to anywhere, whether it's in Europe, whether it be to the Caribbean. They're specifically addressing the United States of America, which makes sense because the film, in terms of its, you know, the actors and where it premiered, it was mainly, for the most part, a United States of America phenomenon, but then it became globalized, and it was globalized for a reason. So on one hand, to deny true history. So it didn't talk about the Moors. It didn't talk about Kemet. It didn't talk about all of these Mali. It didn't talk about Songhai. It didn't give you all these African civilizations throughout the course of history that have contributed to civilization, that contributed to European civilization and so forth. Everything began with slavery. So this concept, this is one of the propagandized concept that has been given to people. And what it does is that it functions as a stain on individuals' psyche, because now they perceive their whole existence to be based upon enslavement. And then also it funnels into this notion of perpetual victimization. So even though people felt empowered, and in particular African-American people, they felt empowered, they also had I could sense the application of disempowerment via the emotional response of victimization. I am now a victim. But then in the process, it also victimizes quote unquote white people, because it's another term, you know, coloration, which is also an illusion, because I've yet to see a white person. I have a white candle in front of me that's burning here right now, and I've never seen someone who looked exactly that color. So even right. That is ambiguous. That's a whole other issue. But to cause white people to feel as if it's their fault, even though we're living in at that time, we're living in the 1980s. Right. So or the early 80s. So the idea that now white people, you must feel guilty for what your quote unquote ancestors did to native peoples and enslaving them. And so this dynamic, so you have victimization, but then you also have the guilt factor. Another dynamic in terms of what was propagandized here was the perpetuation of continuous divisions amongst white folk and black folk based upon a particular historical event. African enslavement. Why would we define our whole existence with each other, you know, as quote unquote black and white people? Again, these are all terms of illusion in the first place. But our whole experience with each other is based upon a historically oppressive experience. Is there more? Was there any other experience that we have had throughout time as quote unquote black people or white people that goes back thousands of years, mind you, that was actually positive, that we can kind of take a different orientation in terms of you know, our experience here today? So there's many different dynamics that play a role. One of the major dynamics, again, was the denial of true history, because in point of fact, African enslavement, this was just a small dynamic in the history of the African experience. We've had so many. The reason why I say that is because though it was a major event, in terms of the African experience here on planet Earth, we have done more than simply experience slavery. Okay, we have contributed more. And so if we get to the point where we perceive the African experience to simply be rooted in African enslavement, then it really diminishes the contributions that we have had. Well, when I say we, I'm just meaning African-American folk that we have had, because the main thrust in terms of the application and the impact that this film has had is mainly on African-American folk, to give us the false illusion that we're being empowered by knowing this particular story, but not recognizing that there is a greater story that needs to be told in terms of African civilization that transcends the concept of race, that transcends African enslavement. And I will tell you that that African-American folk, African people have contributed more to the planet than simply functioning as slaves.
Well, from my own research, because, you know, I've found that race is a modern idea, and actually ancient societies didn't divide people based on physical differences, more so according to religion, status, and class. And also, slavery predates race. This is from my own. Also, race has no genetic basis in terms of the human genome. And, you know, when we talk of science as well, because, in fact, you had a physician, German physician, who I think is a key player. You might have come across his name, Johann Friedrich Blumenbach. And basically, he was, in my own research, the first physician to sort of classify the human races into five categories. And this is really fundamental, because this was in 1793, 1795, you had the five races, the Caucasian race, which is the white race, the Mongolian race, or the yellow race, the Malayan or brown race, the Ethiopian or black race, the American or red race. And he basically founded it on the crania research based on the description of human skulls.
Yes.
You know, so what I'm trying to get at, what I'm trying to ask you is that when we look at science, because you talk of technology, which is essentially based on science, so this is a scientist here who is given these classifications, so therefore people believe it because he's a scientist, you see. So, you know, what is the role of science in sort of perpetuating a myriad of lies or giving misinformation out there? Because many of us, we believe what experts say, but you know, what's your view on the role science has to play in terms of propaganda as well?
Yeah, well, the thing is that if a scientist is inherently coming from a race-based orientation, or that he, in essence, if you come from a race-based orientation, you're going to prescribe the notion of racial inferiority and racial superiority. So if you have, in point of fact, a scientist who is subscribed to the notion of race, then he also, therefore, will subscribe to the notion of racial superiority and racial inferiority. Therefore, all of the scientific work that is going to be done is going to be coming from that scope. And that's right. That's the lens through which he will perceive his research. That is the lens that he will perceive his data. And that will be the lens through which he develops his final conclusions about any given topic. And then what's interesting, if we go back and we look at, we can look at, quote unquote, this is funny, we can look at the quote unquote research and evidence dealing with craniums.
Right.
I show a picture of that too inside the actual works in the part 7-8. I mean, and there's so many different other examples. One of the scientific methods and methods of figuring out the level of intelligence, and it's part of this whole race concept of race and the divisions amongst the races. So you got these the five major races, but a lot of it dealt with in terms of the hierarchy associated with this concept of race and these five races was based upon quote unquote intelligence. This is what they say,
right?
But it's interesting because the methods and means through which they develop their ultimate conclusion as to the hierarchy was not intelligent at all. So we can look back now in 2011 and look at the research, the quote unquote research, and I use that term very loosely in this case, the research that was done on craniums and cranial capacity as a means of dividing the races and saying who's more intelligent. We can look at that now, and it's almost like, what were they thinking? Well, the idea, what I think about is that oftentimes science is used as a means to justify a mentality that is not rooted in truth, that is not rooted in logic, that is not rooted in reason. You know, it's interesting because a lot of people, they say, yeah, well, that's what religion does. Well, no, science does the same thing. Not all science, but I'm talking about in particular. The notion is that if you want to legitimize enslavement of a particular group of people or a subjugation of a particular group of people, then, you know, scientists can be funded in a particular way so that the results that they get will function as the justification for the ultimate goal, which is the subjugation or the enslavement of that group of people. And in many cases, when we go back and take a look in terms of the quote-unquote scientific evidence and research that was issued as justification for African enslavement or the enslavement of whatever group of people or the subjugation of whatever group of people, we realize that it's so utterly ridiculous. And this speaks volumes in terms of the role that science has played in terms of shaping people's minds so as to accept the concept of race. See, as you said before, the concept of race, it is a more modern invention. In the ancient world, the concept of race was not applicable. You know, in terms of differences was largely related along cultural ideals. It was largely related around or centered around religious ideals. It was not centered around skin color. And race is mainly deals with skin color. And if you try to apply that type of a concept now to like let's say 4000 BCE, people look at you like you're crazy. So how did we get to a point where now we are so programmed and so manipulated to where race becomes the center of our existence, and we perceive all of our experiences here on planet Earth based upon this race-centric concept, and this race-centric concept is an utter illusion.
Right. Well, if you come to London, everything is apparently so multicultural. You know, don't worry about race. You know, everyone, we can all get along. You know, I've come to see that race is not biological, but racism is real. So therefore, essentially, in your latest work, you talked about character imprints. In fact, I was watching something, a recent interview last week, where Denzel Washington was saying in an interview that in his early career, they offered him $600,000 to play someone who was getting lynched. And he was supposed to be laughing about it or something like that. And he actually called up Sidney Poitier, and basically Sidney Poitier just advised him that, well, you know, this is your decision, but just remember that an image is worth 1,000 words, and anything that is in film is going to last forever. And when Denzel yes. actually took that advice, he said, actually, he just declined the role because he said that, you know, he took Sidney Poitier's advice that anything that is on film lasts forever. So, you know, imagery is very powerful. And, you know, you talk about the character imprints within the Borg Agenda Part 7, Water, Space and Time, in terms of that. The characters within Star Trek, I'm not sure if the audience can remember, but the character, one of the main characters in Star Trek is actually a character from Roots. And this is very interesting. You know, his actual name is LeVar Burton. That is, and he played the young Kunta Kinte. And in Star Trek, he was called Georgie LaForge. But, you know, it's very interesting correlation you made there in terms how within film, because, you know, we're obsessed with movies in this age that we find ourselves in, but they have something called character imprints where they can transfer your character, you know, from one story to the other, from one film to the other. But at the same time, you're still continuing the same character. Please just expound upon that, you know, for the audience. I found that fascinating. I mean, I was like, I didn't even see that link there.
Yes, yes. And for those of y'all who are, if you have not seen my earlier works, I deal with this concept, and I presented it early on when I first began doing documentary film, this concept of the temporal transference of the subliminal character imprint. And what this means is that you can transfer a character archetype from one film to the next, and that character archetype will function within both storylines, you know, those two films. And in point of fact, over the course of an actor's career, he can develop a particular character imprint that can last throughout his career, and it will be applicable to each movie. And if you look at each one of those movies, you realize that the movie itself tells, and even each one of those movies actually comprise a greater storyline. Just tells a greater story that transcends any one given film. See, we've been so programmed, we go into the movie theater and the beginning credits open up. We think that's the beginning of that film. And then when we watch the film for an hour and a half, hour, 45 minutes, 2 hours. And then when it's over with, the ending credits start rolling down, and then that's it. Well, you know, one of the things people have to understand is that in terms of the writing and the script writing, actually each these particular actors, each role that they play sets up a particular archetype. And this archetype can be transferred over to the next film that they play, the next film role that they play. And an excellent example of this, because I also do Denzel Washington, I break down his the subliminal his archetype as well, and how it's passed on from one role to the next. But one individual that we can look at clearly is Keanu Reeves in his roles over the years. So you can go back to his role as, let's see, as Neo, right? You can look at his role as Siddhartha. This is all – he's all the one. You can look at his role in Johnny Mnemonic. Johnny Mnemonic was the precursor to The Matrix. This was the setting of the stage of this particular character imprint to transfer itself over to the next film, Johnny Mnemonic, or the next film of The Matrix, where he had already established his character imprint within the cybernetic world, within the cyberspace world, if you will. So there's many different examples. And if you look at many of his roles in terms of Keanu Reeves, he often plays the role of the Christ figure. You know, he's the individual who comes in, and he has, you know, I mean, you can just go and look down the list. So in part, what I'm getting at is that these archetypes, in terms of how they are built over time, they have more power over people's subconscious mind the more and more you build these archetypes up, because now each character in the next film, not only do they embolden whatever character that is inside that particular film that you may be viewing, but they also encompass subliminally as an archetype all the previous roles that they play that you have seen them play in, and therefore that imprint has a much more powerful right. impact on the psyche of the viewer. Now, in terms of Star Trek, what I have found, one of the fascinating things that I found was that many of the actors that appear in Roots actually appear in Star Trek. I even joked with my wife. I was like, you know, if we did the math in terms of LeVar Burton's imprint, his archetype, what he presents, the transference of it over time, and we just kind of like looked at Kunta Kinte in terms of the storyline, and then bring that all the way forward to the Star Trek universe, he would be enslaved for over 600. He would have been enslaved for over 700 years. Now, let me explain to you why I say
right,
that.
Right, right.
This is fascinating stuff. LeVar Burton, his major role in prior to Star Trek: The Next Generation, in terms of his imprint, his major role that he had played that he is remembered for outside of LeVar Burton, outside of Geordi LaForge, the character in Star Trek, is that of Kunta Kinte. And so here is Kunta Kinte, who is inside of Roots, and Roots is really just programming to have people relive African enslavement. And perceive their existence to be centered around or their experience here on the planet Earth to begin in African enslavement. And this is one of the propaganda pieces that has stemmed from Roots, as if African folk didn't contribute anything else to civilization. All we came here to do is just to simply be slaves. But if you go back to that role as Kunta Kinte, what we have is an African who is captured. He is taken into slavery, he is brought to the United States of America, and then he is slowly indoctrinated into slavery. And as he is indoctrinated into this system of slavery, he loses more and more of his cultural ties to Africa. He loses his name, Kunta Kinte, and he's called Toby. He loses his identity, as you were. He is further indoctrinated into this system of slavery over time. Now, what happens is that his archetype is fully emboldened by this role that he played. I'm talking about subliminally LeVar Burton. If prior to Star Trek: The Next Generation, if anyone were to say LeVar Burton, what role did he play? People would say immediately Kunta Kinte, the African slave. Okay, so that's his initial archetype. Now, he's done other things as well, but the two primary things that he'll be remembered for is playing the role of Kunta Kinte and playing the role of Geordi LaForge. Now, what takes place inside the Star Trek universe, and again, there are so many actors that actually play inside Roots that have roles inside the Star Trek universe. Well, there's a reason why. And the reason why is because the story of Roots tells of African enslavement, where a colonizing force comes to this indigenous land, and when it gets to this indigenous land, it begins to take slaves from this indigenous land, transport them to the Americas, transport them to the United States of America, bring them here and have them function as slaves here in the United States of America. This is the storyline of Roots. Well, this is precisely the storyline of Star Trek. It's the same, but the difference is, instead of having these sea ships going out to sea to seek out new life and new land to conquer, you have starships out in space that are seeking out new lands, and these new lands aren't
right.
Continents. These new lands are whole planets. So LeVar Burton's, in terms of his role, it fits perfectly. He is, in point of fact, in terms of his role on Star Trek: Next Generation, he is functioning as a slave. And I'm breaking this down in terms of each episode, the first four episodes of Star Trek: Next Generation. He functions as a slave chauffeur who drives the ship initially. This is his role. The other black character or African character on ship functions as a security guard, and he represents this is Worf. He represents the African savage who is predisposed to terrorize people. He's predisposed to violence. He has a level of intellectual retardation. Well, this is precisely the story this is precisely the propaganda that was told about Africans in terms of the justification of the enslavement of Africans. Now, Geordi LaForge, his name, I even break down in terms of the etymology, because oftentimes these writers, as you stated before, not only do they have a keen understanding of world history that is not taught in the public education system, but they also have an understanding of etymology. Every single individual who is given a name is given a particular name for a reason. So they name LeVar Burton, who is a symbolic representation of an African slave via his subliminal imprint that is transferred from Roots. He is named Geordi LaForge. Now, if we look at the etymology of Geordi LaForge, Geordi is derived from George. George means farmer of the land. Okay, I break this right. down. Geordi means right. farmer of the land. In that his role in Roots is that of a slave that farms land for his master. Well, inside Star Trek Next Generation, his name is Geordi. He is, in fact, that. He is a slave that farms land for his master. But the difference is that now it's set inside the future. His last name, LaForge, means workman in hard materials. Workman in hard materials, well, what does this mean? Well, the difference is that in Roots, he is working as an African slave who farms land. But in Star Trek Next Generation, LaForge is functioning as someone who works in engineering, who works with hard materials. And if you look at his interaction in terms of being on board ship, that's precisely what he does. He's a workman in hard materials. So what we have is that his name itself, in terms of etymology speaking, Geordi LaForge, is tying two characters into one. It's tying his role, meaning LaVar's Burton character imprint, his role as Kunta Kinte within Roots, and his role now here on the Starship Enterprise as a mechanic of the ship, as an engineer of the ship who works in hard materials. The Enterprise, I even make this very clear to people inside the film, and I break this down even more inside Part 7B. When we say Enterprise, why do they name the ship Enterprise in the first place? Enterprise is a financial venture. The Starship Enterprise is continuing mission to explore strange new worlds. What? to seek out new life and new civilizations. What do you mean, new life and new civilizations? To boldly go where no civilized man, really, civilized man has gone before. See, the idea is that this Enterprise is not about going and finding new life to go experience. No, it's this Enterprise, it's a financial venture that is set in the future. Well, this financial venture is precisely what African enslavement was. It was a financial, in part, it was a financial venture. Star Trek, the Star Trek universe is merely retelling historical events that the writers are completely aware of. And as they write their scripts to these, they subliminally encode this information. And all one needs to do is simply look at the name. One other name real quickly here. Inside the original Star Trek television series, there is an actor, Nichelle Nichols, a beautiful woman, just a wonderfully beautiful woman. And her role, in terms of her name, means freedom amongst the stars. What this indicates, Nyota Uhura, freedom amongst the stars. Well, what this means is that if she finds freedom amongst the stars, in other words, because space in terms of Star Trek, it's a symbolic representation of water. Spacefaring vessels are a symbolic representation of seafaring vessels. What it really is saying is that in order for her to come into freedom, she had to go out into space to find freedom, or she had to get off of a particular land to find freedom. Right. So what does this mean? This means that wherever she was prior to getting on the ship, she must have been enslaved. So her name in and of itself shows you that she was enslaved prior to coming aboard the ship in this particular case. In point of fact, if I asked you right now, I said, OK, who is the most important Star Trek character ever? Who would you say?
Captain Kirk.
Captain Kirk. Well, if we look at the name Captain Kirk, his full name is James Tiberius Kirk. What does this mean? You know, what does this mean exactly? Well, right. James means ruler or king. Okay, so you have like King James, right? Well, it's a symbolic resonance. James means ruler or king. Tiberius is tied to who?
Right. It's very, very. You know, these writers, I always say that politicians don't govern the world, writers do, because writers, whoever controls the pen, controls the nation. It's all inside law, yes. It's all inside grammar, which comes from the word grimoire, which is a book of spells. So language is spells, laws. Laws. A lot of people don't understand law because law is encoded that way, so you don't understand it on purpose. But essentially, you know, you also talk about manhood. You have a great radio show on Soul Visions, a blog talk radio, Soul Visions Radio, and you talk about manhood, but you also talked about it within the Borg Agenda Part 7, Water, Space, and Time, and you talked about the disempowered representation of manhood and masculinity within some of the characters, which I found very interesting.
Yes, yes. In point of fact, Geordi LaForge, his role as, LeVar Burton's role as Geordi LaForge presented a very disempowered representation of manhood. See, one of the dynamics that happens in the Star Trek universe, it wasn't until Star Trek Deep Space Nine where we actually see an African-American or African or Moorish man being represented in an honorable way. See, Geordi LaForge, in terms of his archetype, he was very disempowered. Okay, Worf, he epitomized African, quote unquote, African savagery and intellectual devolution. The concept of manhood is such an important concept for people to understand in terms of its relevance, in terms of its application to the upliftment of the human species. But what we find inside Star Trek in terms of the representations of manhood and masculinity is actually represented in a very devolved state. And this is set in the future. So even Captain Kirk, in terms of his role, it was a devolved aspect. And we can look at him as a character. His main, I mean, he really epitomized the promiscuous, sexually dominant male archetype. That's really what his character archetype represented. That's why inside the Star Trek, the original, you know, his interactions to a large degree in terms of his dealing with women, it was rooted in a level of disrespect towards the feminine principle. And the importance of us recognizing, I mean, because for a lot, what takes place is that as people watch Star Trek, they begin to be influenced by these archetypes, and they begin to perceive these archetypes as being honorable representations of masculinity and manhood. As a matter of fact, real quickly here, in terms of Captain Kirk, his first name, James, is tied to King James, so we're talking ruler or king. Tiberius is tied to Julius Caesar, okay? Tiberius Julius Caesar. So we're talking about Rome now. And then Kirk, his last name means church. So in essence, what we find, we're saying the ruler of the Catholic Church in Rome. And so we're talking about the Vatican. And who was it that sanctioned African enslavement? It was the Vatican. It was the Pope. So the reason why this is relevant is because what it says is even in the name Captain Kirk, James Tiberius Kirk, It's basically a representation of the Catholic Church via the Pope deciding to sanction the enslavement of African people. And therefore, when we understand that dynamic, and the most important character in the Star Trek universe, Captain Kirk, James Tiberius Kirk, how that applies is that if we look at the introduction to Star Trek in terms of the mission statement, these are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Yes, it's a financial venture. Slavery. It's continuing mission. In this case, it's 5-year mission to explore strange new worlds. Yeah, like Africa. To seek out new civilizations. Yes, like as in Africa. To boldly go where no man has gone before, but really where no civilized man has gone before. These archetypes present to the world, and whether you want to look at it in terms of masculinity or manhood, yeah, this applies perfectly, because what it shows is if we subscribe to the notion of race as men and we begin to perceive racial divisions wherein we set up a hierarchy, this speaks to the level of our degradation of men and masculinity, because one of the primary things that we must adhere to is truth as men. And one of the primary institutions in terms of what we must adhere to as men is to recognize that we must be fair and we must be just. And that this also includes the manner in which we define ourselves. We must be fair and we must be just, and we must uphold that. And we can't be fair and we cannot be just so long as we adhere to the concept of race, which is based upon competition amongst humanity and division as a means of disempowering. And whether this is coming through the Star Trek universe or otherwise, or whether it's coming through films that we see in Hollywood, whatever the case may be, or magazines, whatever the case may be, we must recognize it as men, that we have an obligation and responsibility to call it out for what it is, and to not only raise our own sons up in such a manner and our own children up in such a manner to where they do not prescribe to these race-centric ideas that further divide the human species along frivolous lines. That not only do we do that, but we also seek to produce works that will help other folk to get up from under this degree of subliminal manipulation. And I will dare say that most folk who subscribe to the concept of race, They will innately have within that concept the notion of racial superiority and racial inferiority. These two concepts of racial superiority and racial inferiority is not indigenous to the human species. I'm going to say it again. These two concepts of racial inferiority and racial superiority is not indigenous to the human species. It is something that we must be indoctrinated into accepting. And whether this is coming from Roots, whether it's coming from Star Trek, the Star Trek television series, or whether it's coming from whatever media source that it's coming from, we must be indoctrinated. And I will propose to you all that it is now time. If we are to ascend this species back to a place of cosmic respectability, then it's going to be necessary for us to dismiss with the concept of race as a means of further dividing the human species, and that's precisely what it has been used to fulfill.
Right. Well, race as well also breeds fear, because a lot of us, we're living in a perpetual state of fear. And whenever I'm inferior, if I feel inferior, then I'm going to be in fear. And it's funny because when I was looking at Star Trek, you know, the characters, you know, that were fearful, it was because it had something to do with race. And
yes.
Very interesting. When we look at the character imprint, one thing I noted is that you have a character called Jean-Luc Picard, who mm-hmm. was a captain. This, many might know him as a bald-headed man. He actually played in the X-Men series films as Professor X and Professor Charles Francis Xavier. And this fictional character, one of his special powers was that he could read, control, and influence human minds. A scientific genius.
Yes.
You know, I found this fascinating because this is, he sits in a wheelchair, and I was saying, okay, this is just like he's sitting in the ship, in the Starfleet, you know,
mm-hmm.
and this
mm-hmm.
is supposed to be the mastermind of manipulating human minds, you know, this scientific genius. So I just find it very interesting that he goes from, a captain in Starfleet to such a prestigious role in the X-Men, because these are powerful roles in terms of what it actually does in the psyche of young children that are watching these kinds of films, because they can say, okay, I want to be like that.
Yes, and X-Men, as quiet as it is kept, X-Men is about race. It is about genetics and genetic superiority and genetic inferiority. That's what it's about.
Right, right.
You know, and many people, we have been manipulated to perceive ours and identify ourselves with the X-Men because we feel like we have been oppressed and so forth. But in point of fact, the X-Men represent the quote-unquote ruling elite who perceive themselves to be genetically superior. And so, therefore, the manner in which that superiority manifests itself is through these extreme powers or quote-unquote gifts. And so as we begin to identify with these archetypes, what we are in essence doing is we're identifying with this concept of racial superiority and racial inferiority. Matter of fact, my wife and I, we recently watched on the internet, we watched the most recent X-Men film. And if y'all take a look, the whole premise is based upon race. The whole thing starts in Nazi Germany. I mean, really think about this.
Right.
And if you listen to the dialogue that people have throughout the film, it's based upon the concept of race and racial superiority, racial inferiority. And point of fact, I mean, if you really look closely, too, in terms of the one black character inside of the film, he's the first one to die. Well, this is also part of it. You see this in many different films, you know, that where the first person to actually perish is often a black person or an African-American Moorish person. And if you listen carefully in terms of the dialogue right before he dies, he's talking about his ability to adapt, but ultimately he fails at his adaptation. What are they talking about when they're talking about this thing to adapt? Well, we're getting into concepts related to genetic modification. And who is this guy? I mean, I present him inside the Darwin of evolution and being able to adapt. Listen very carefully to the dialogue. It's all about race. And X-Men promotes this,
right,
just as Star Trek promotes it. Interesting enough, too, when you look at the etymology of Jean-Luc Picard, and I'm going to reveal this in Part 7B, it's very fascinating because it also ties to Rome. And in that he is the captain of the ship, he also functions as the master of the slave plantation.
Mm. You know, I'm already anticipating the next book. I mean, definitely it was such a great piece of work that you put out. I definitely encourage everyone to go and check it out. And it's on your site, is that?
Yes.
Just give your site so people can actually...
Yes, sure. My website is linenhonorfilms.com, linenhonorfilms.com. And that series, you can actually watch all of that series. It's 12, almost 14 hours now. You can find it on my website there, and you just click on a link that says documentaries, and I have a whole list of them. And you just scroll down towards the bottom of the page, and that'll be listed there. The Borgs and the series will be listed there.
Well, we can, you know, as we wind down, I just wanted to talk about transhumanism. A lot of people don't know what that is. because it's not really a mainstream word yet. But when we talk of the assimilation into technology, technology is becoming our best friends. In fact, many of us, you know, we feel very naked without having a mobile phone if we are left without the internet. You know, I've had to, even within my own self, you know, sometimes if I'm traveling, I don't have the internet. You know, you get a bit nervous. You say, oh, mm-hmm. he's emailing me. You know, yeah. And it's just amazing how we've become so attached to this internet that if we don't have it, what are we going to do? How are we going to survive? But one thing I know that you focus on is the family unit, the family institution. And I know that, you know, your work really is about, you know, protecting the family, maintaining the family. And essentially, when we look at a lot of society, it's all about being independent. And I think that's what technology, the internet in my mind, is a great tool. But essentially, that's all it is for me. It's just a tool. It's just the means. It's not the end. So when we talk of the family institution and transhumanism linked in with technology, because Star Trek, it was written in, you know, decades ago. But at the same time, they were talking about technology. The kinds of technology they were talking about are just coming into existence today. But one thing, when I'm watching Star Trek, I look to, you know, the family relationships. And it didn't really seem that any of the characters had really, like, a deep bond with their family. It mm-hmm. just seemed like, for instance, you had Jean-Luc Picard. You wondered, you know, where was his wife? Where was his children? It just seems like he was just someone doing his job. And, you know, he didn't, you know, he was very cold. Not cold in that way, but he didn't have children. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just, he was all about his job. He was all about, you know, doing his job and very, you know, very mechanical, almost like a robot, you know, which was very interesting. In mm-hmm. fact, I just had a recent guest on the show, Thomas Sheridan, who wrote a book called Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath.
Mm.
You know, very fascinating work from this author. But, you know, you know, and it just made me feel, because I know your work, you cover, you know, you're big on the family. And just please, just, you know, when we talk of, you know, not just Star Trek, but, you know, films in general, you know, how they sort of portray the family unit.
Yes.
How do you feel they're handling, you know, this such a sacred institution?
Yes, yes. And see, one of the, it's a beautiful thing, because when I look at my own family, I have five children, and we just had our third son was born 3 weeks ago. Our fifth child was born 3 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
And, oh, thank you. Thank you. And the family institution is so important. Even within our own family, you know, we all have different skin colors, each and every one of us. And so the concept of race and being specific, you know, like, okay, race means this. You're either this or you're not. It's not applicable. And we're not teaching our children, look, these race-based concepts. Understand that this world is yours to experience. This life is yours. And even metaphysically, you transcend the biological that we call the human being, which is a whole other conversation for a whole other time. What we find in terms of media is the propagation of a very devolved representation of the family institution. And whether you look at the Star Trek or you look at anything, you rarely see holistic family institutions. You rarely see male-female relationships that are whole and that are functioning to at a great capacity. One of the messages that my wife and I, we seek to bring to people is that it is possible to have a positive relationship with your species have, and it is possible to raise a family institution wherein both parents are taking an active role and a participatory role in their children's lives, and where the children are being given everything they need, especially the love and the guidance and the wisdom. See, the family institution was, in terms of the biological thing that we call the human being, the family institution was to be the primary institution which emboldened the children and provided the children with the insight and the wisdom and the knowledge that would allow the child to further evolve its intellectual capacities, to evolve its spiritual understandings, to evolve its, right, its sense of self, its sense of place in the cosmos. This was supposed to be passed on from father to son, from father to daughter, from mother to son, to mother to daughter. And in terms of the ascendancy of the biological entity, we call the human being back into the realm of cosmic respectability, it was a family institution that was supposed to do this. Because what takes place is every single generation is to be given the best of what the previous generation could give. And with right. each successive generation, you find that the species is further evolved because you have a new generation here on planet Earth that is that not only is able to learn for the next 80, 100 years its life experiences and learn all the lessons there, but also is able to take what their ancestors provided for them. This is why the family institution is so important. What we find, especially in Star Trek, because Star Trek, in terms of Starfleet Command and these ships out at sea, this is nothing more than the Navy. This is nothing. It's a military force. See, it's the pretense that somehow we're out here trying to explore space to help other people. No, it's about domination and control. It's about seeking right. new life and new civilization to dominate and control. So the Navy functions as the subliminal representation of what's really taking place. And what we find inside the military industrial complex is that family institutions do not thrive. Well, there's a reason why. Because you have men, and in some cases you have women, who are out at sea for extended periods of time, who are out fighting wars for extended periods of time, who are out, you know, they rarely see their families. They rarely see their children. They come home from ship and their children have not seen them for 6 months. Well, this is precisely what takes place inside Star Trek. See, and there's only one representation of a family institution that is holistic that I have seen in the Star Trek television series. And that comes from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, wherein you have a black character played by Avery Brooks. And this character's name is Captain Benjamin Lafayette Sisko, who raises his son while still within the construct of a military industrial complex. But he still functions as a father to a great degree. But if you look at all the other characters, Captain Picard, he has an aversion towards children. He actually despises children. There is no other family institution that is represented within any of the Star Trek universe characters, wherein the family institution is whole, wherein you have a man and a woman who is actually raising their children within this, those two characters are main characters within. There's a reason why, and the reason why is because ultimately Star Trek is a military institution, and this mimics the military institutions here on planet Earth currently. The family institution is not the point. The point is that you subjugate yourself to an institution and you do the bidding of the institution, even at the expense of your family institution. And one of the things that my wife and I were trying to bring to the world is how important it is for us to reaffirm the family institution, because in essence, it is the most empowering means through which we can ascend this biological entity that we call the human being back into the realm of cosmic respectability. And this is in part why I'm here on the planet. It's not just to do films, and it's not just to get on radio shows and talk. I seek to inspire this biological entity that we call the human being in such a way to we can get it back on track, so that so that other beings in the cosmos can look back at us and say, oh, they've come back to cosmic respectability. We've fallen so low, and there's so much work that has to be done. And whether it is done through film, whether it's done through music, what have you, whether it's done through radio shows, there is so much work to be done. But in essence, the family institution, I'm able to pass down to my sons and daughters the best of what I know, and they can take that and build upon that for their lifetime and then pass that down to the next generation. What a wonderful world this would be. Say 600, 700 years. What a wonderful world this would be, say, 10,000 years from now, if we all committed to the family institution and we're able to transmit this wonderful information from one generation to the next. That's what I am dedicated to here on planet Earth at this time.
Well, I definitely want to let you know that you're definitely doing your job, because real recognize real. I always say that. You see, when people look at individuals, I always say people always have to not look at someone's actions, you know, at a particular point in time, but you have to see their whole body of work.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, because the thing is, human beings are fallible. You know, everyone has positive and negative. It's just energy. So if you look at someone, for instance, if you are walking down a street and you see someone slap someone, if you were just to base your whole conclusion about what this person is on that one event, then really you'll be limiting yourself because you haven't seen that whole person's life.
Yes.
You see?
Yes.
So essentially, you know, what you're doing, your whole body of work is fantastic. You know, and I know the kind of work you do, it's not easy, simply because, you know, a lot of us, we're still plugged in heavily. You know, we're still drinking vodka, we're still partying, you know. Many of us, we're still plugged in.
Yes.
Let's just leave it at that.
Yes.
So, you know, when you get someone who is challenging your paradigm, what people want to do is attack, you see, because it's almost like you can't tell them. It's like Neo, when he was in the Matrix, he says he almost wants to throw up. because he can't believe that, you know, the world has been pulled over his eyes, you know, has been a lie. You know, it can be very, it's a hard pill to swallow. But, you know, once again, I definitely commend you. As we, just the last question I just want to pose to you, because we're all about, you know, solutions as well. I mean, a lot of us, you know, how would you, you know, can you give any advice to people who are still seeing people in terms of colors? Because it's a hard program. I'm not even going to lie myself. Sometimes we all fall victim to those stereotypes.
Yes.
You know, you might see a Chinese person say, okay, they're good at martial arts.
Right.
Watch the Bruce Lee film.
Mm-hmm.
You might see, you know, all of these, you might see a black person say, oh, they're great at basketball.
Right.
Just because they're tall. When really they may be a great piano player. You see, so, you know, yeah. How does one sort of, you know, go about sort of deleting these programs we have about race, because we're still seeing, many of us are still seeing other people in terms of stereotypes, racial stereotypes.
Yes. And those,
so how does one, yeah.
Yeah, and those stereotypes, they're so devolved. You know, and they're not even intelligent. You know, they're not intelligent. You know, it's like saying, you know, they all like to eat chicken, or, you know, Asians, they like to eat rice, all of them. You know, it's like we throw these things out, and my wife right. and I, we joke about these things too. But when we joke about these things, it's because we recognize that it's utterly, we can laugh about it. You know, for me, what I think about is, what am I? Right. You know, essentially, what am I? And whatever it is that I define myself is as, can it be simply reduced to a color, or can it simply be reduced to a stereotype? See, when we talk about the subjugation of the human species, in part what has taken place because of the concept of race, which also brings forth the concept of racial superiority and racial inferiority and competition amongst the human species, is the limiting of possibility as to what it is that the biological entity that we call the human being is. So we limit, we in essence limit this biological entity that has this wonderful life experience here that we can go into a spiritual contract to experience with. We limit it by the terminology. We limit it by the language. We limit it by the stereotypes. This is to say that, you know, if I recognize myself, essentially, if I ask the question, what am I, essentially, I can't say that I'm a biological entity that we call a human being, then that's it, and I look a certain kind of way, and my name is Lennon Honor. I can't say that, because I know that's not it. I can say I'm a cosmic being, a cosmic creative being that went into spiritual contract with this biological that we call in an honor. See, that opens up possibilities that transcend the physicality of our existence, and ultimately, and for sure, it transcends this concept of race. See, in the depths of the spiritual contribution that we make as soul beings here on planet Earth that manifests here and go into spiritual, within the context of the wholeness of who and what we are as soul beings, the concept of race cannot be applied. This is to say that, does your soul have a race?
Right.
Is your soul black? Is your soul white? You know, is your soul superior or inferior to anyone else? See, it doesn't apply. So the whole idea, see, and this is one of the things that I've been really trying to teach more recently, is that so long as we identify exclusively with the biological entity that we call human being, then we will not be able to have the spiritual insight to recognize the spiritual, that the spiritual aspects of the biological that we call human being that transcends the physicality of our existence here. See, once we recognize who and what we are essentially, many of the concepts, many of which are divisive, many of them are fear-based concepts, many of which are designed to disempower the human species, many of those, they simply melt away. I have this saying that I like to use. This concept of race is like a thin mist surrounding a blazing sun. And this is to say that when we claim our true brilliance as spiritual beings manifest here, as soul beings manifested here who go into contract with this biological entity we call human, when we recognize our full brilliance, that sun shines so brightly and that mist simply dissipates as the illusion that it was. So many of us have that mist over our eyes where we classify each other. You're black, you're white. You know, I'm of this race and you're of that race and my race is better than yours. I'm more melanated than you, and therefore I'm better than you. What is this? I have to say this real quickly here. See, even the oppressed, in their oppression, have taken hold of race-based concept and turned them around and applied them to their oppressors to such a degree that they function to the same degree in terms of their mental thinking as their oppressors. What do I mean by this? Well, there are now people who call themselves black people. If you want to call yourself that, that's your business. I just recognize myself. I'm a sovereign being. You can't classify me with these little terms here on planet Earth. I'm a cosmic being, please. But we have people who now perceive themselves to be genetically superior to white people based upon certain concepts and ideas. And what's interesting is that this is merely a reactionary mode of thinking that stems from a sense of inferiority that was given to these people from the same people that they classify now, these white people, as being inferior. What do I mean by that? See, the notion of race, if we took it as a mentality and we give that mentality to a particular person and that person uses that mentality to enslave or to disempower another group of people, and they give and therefore that group of people that has been enslaved and have been oppressed by that mentality, at a certain point they begin to internalize their inferiority, and as a psychological defense mechanism, they must project themselves as being superior now. And therefore, they use the same mentality that oppressed them to oppress the individual that oppressed them in the first place. So therefore, they become the oppressor. They identify themselves with their oppressor, and they take on the same mentality as their oppressor. And in the process, they perceive themselves to be superior to their oppressor. Well, the idea of what I'm trying to get for people to understand in the first place is, why do you buy in to the oppression in the first place? See, I don't have to make someone else seem inferior to me. And I don't have to make myself seem superior to anyone else, because I'm simply in my process. And the brilliance in me shines every single day. I don't have to provide evidence and proof of it. I just simply live my life. But I don't have to demean anyone else. And I don't have to make someone seem subject to me, or make someone seem less than I am, or racially inferior or genetically inferior to me. I don't have to do that. All I have to do is live my life to the best of my capacity and provide an example for the whole human species of what we all can become, and what we can become at a certain point and transcend. Whatever it is, wherever I'm at right now, I recognize I can't be limited by these concepts. And there's no need for me to disempower anyone. There's no need for me to demean anyone. And there's no need for me to say, oh, because I'm melanated, I'm more better than someone else. Or because I'm black, I'm less than someone else. I don't have to do any of that. All I have to do, when we talk about the ascendancy of this biological entity we call him being, I must live my life, and I must live it in a way that is in tune with the essence of who I am, which is not a color. The essence of who you are is not a color. The essence of all y'all who are listening in on it, it's not a color. It's not even a culture. You transcend this biological entity we call human being. You transcend space and time, which is part when I try the encoded message inside my film, Water, Space, and Time. Let me read this real quickly here, because I didn't put it in the film. Let me I have to read this, and it only take about a minute. I didn't include this inside the actual documentary, but I was going to open up with this. Just so that people understand, the concept of space and time and water. See, the Borg's in part 7, water, space, and time. Because this ties to this concept of race and racial superiority and racial inferiority, and which has been propagandized in the Star Trek universe. See, many of us, the reason why we have come to adhere to these concepts of race, it has been through subliminal manipulation. And in some cases, the reason why we subscribe to racial superiority and racial inferiority is because we have our own sense of racial inferiority that we have not dealt with. And the real issue is, why do you subscribe to race in the first place? Let me read this. Water, space, and time. Water, a medium within which all human life is maturated while in the mother's womb. Space, the infinite domain wherein consciousness resides. Time, a multidimensional measurement of the spiraling out of creation. Water, space, and time. When we understand what those three things are, that's why I had to call this the Borgs into part 7, Water, Space, and Time. When we understand what that really means, the concept of race cannot apply. Let me give an example. Can the concept of race and racial superiority and racial inferiority apply to the mother's womb? No. Why? Because the mother's womb is a human or a biological manifestation of the cosmic womb, and the cosmic womb could care less about what color you are. So it cannot be applied in this physical dimension. We're in the sacred womb. As this baby is maturating inside the woman's womb, Is the baby, as it maturates, is it concerned about what color it is? No. It cannot be applied to that sacred place.
Right.
See, this is what I mean. Babies don't come into this world and say, what race am I? No, this is something that we have to be propagandized. See, it's not applicable to the sacred womb, and it's definitely not applicable to the cosmic womb. Space, the infinite domain wherein consciousness resides. Is consciousness a color? Is consciousness a genetic determinant? Absolutely not. Consciousness doesn't even exist inside this physical domain. Do I need to say that again? Consciousness
right.
does not exist here on planet Earth. I know we want to believe so. Well, there's an aspect of human consciousness, but in terms of who and what you are as a soul being manifested here, your consciousness is not here. Therefore, the biological dictates in terms of the concept of race cannot be applied. Your consciousness cannot be – is your consciousness a color? No. Is your consciousness a color of skin? No. Is your consciousness a culture? No. You transcend all of this. This is what I mean by we transforming and elevating and ascending this biological species back into the realm of cosmic respectability. These are the principles that must be reinstalled into the quote-unquote human consciousness. But understand that ultimately your consciousness as a soul being does not exist here. And then, of course, time, a multidimensional measurement of the spiraling out of creation. This is to say, when we understand in terms of the spiraling out of creation, I'm writing a book on this at this time. This should be my next project after I'm done with the book, part seven. When we understand the multidimensional measurement of the spiraling out of time, which of spiraling out of creation, which we call time, and we understand essentially who and what we are, which is not a color, we are multidimensional beings. And this is to say that some of us have manifested here on planet Earth in many different forms simultaneously. And in some cases, we may be quote-unquote black. In other cases, we might be quote-unquote yellow. In other cases, we may be quote-unquote red. In other cases, we may be white. You see what I'm saying? We manifest. This is the power of us as soul beings manifested here. And so, in essence, here on planet Earth, does the concept of race apply to your consciousness? How can it? Does it apply to the spiraling out of creation? You as a creative being spiraling out into the universe in many different forms and in many different dimensions simultaneously, how can we apply the concept of race? Where in point of fact, many of us are existing here at this time simultaneously as multi, quote-unquote, races. This is to say that some of us have been so manipulated that we are actually racist against ourselves, and we perceive our own manifestation here as biological entities that we call the human being, one being more superior than the next, i.e. racism. How can the concept of racism apply when you, within the context of a soul being that manifests here as both black and as white? Yes, and some of you who are listening here, you have manifested here in many different forms. As a matter of fact, my wife is a manifestation of my soul self here in physical form as a feminine being. So therefore, how can I argue with her? I cannot, because ultimately I would be arguing with my own soul self. And can that be done? No, it cannot be done. So that cannot be applied argument based upon, quote unquote, masculine and feminine being or male. It cannot be applied to my relationship with my wife, because ultimately I recognize that my wife is simply the feminine manifestation of me as a soul being. Well, the same thing applies to the concept of race. How can I be at odds with someone if I recognize that I have the capacity, the creative capacity and the spiraling out of creation to manifest here in whatever, quote unquote, color skin I so choose? To go into spiritual contract, this to say that I know in my heart, I know this to be the case, that I am not just walking around here as Lennon Honor. I'm walking around here on planet Earth as many different beings. And some of those beings may be yellow. Some of those beings may be, quote unquote, black. Some of them may be white. And within the cosmic order, I could care less what color they are, because it's not applicable in terms of me recognizing the full breadth of my spiritual dimension here. See, this is what I mean by when the concept of race is such a devolved concept, and when we really get to the core essence of who and what we are. That's why I said initially when you asked the question, I'm sorry for belaboring this, but when you asked the initial question, what can we do? Well, in terms of getting beyond the concept of race, we'll ask the question, what am I? Are you a color of skin? Are you a race? Are you simply a biological entity? And the truth of the matter is no, you're none of those. I mean, in part, yes, but ultimately, in terms of the biological entity we call the human being, yeah, that's part of you, but that's a minute part of you. You're far more profound than that. And we recognize ourselves as soul beings that is participating in this spiraling out of creation. The concept of race does not apply. The concept of race is like preschool. Well, one of the things that has to happen is we have to ascend this biological entity that we call the human being back into the realm of cosmic respectability. And, of course, getting beyond preschool is just the baby step. there's so much more that has to be done. But, of course, we need to start somewhere. And one of the things I seek to do inside Borg Into Part 7, Water, Space, and Time, is to kind of set a foundation to where people can start to take those steps to where they begin to redefine the concept of race for what it is. And ultimately, when we redefine it for what it is, we realize it's simply an illusion that has been utilized as a means of division and as a means of disempowerment and ultimately as a means of further devolving this human species on planet Earth. I want people to understand that, yes, there are forces in the universe that seek to devolve this human species here on planet Earth. And it's not tied to race. It ain't tied to color of skin. But I want you all to know that we all play a part via our spiritual contract to this biological entity we call human being to ascend this species back to the realm of cosmic respectability. And one of the ways we can begin to do this is simply to recognize who and what we are, ask the question, what am I? And then all of those ideas and concepts and thought forms that we can perceive now once we recognize who and what we are as being deterrents to us ascending this species to the realm of cosmic respectability, all of those concepts, all those ideas, all those thought forms must be purged and must be let go of. And one of them, one of the primary ones, is the concept of race, which also brings forth the concept of racial superiority and racial inferiority. I do not play it, and I will not teach my sons or daughters to play that game. They will recognize that there are cosmic beings here, and they're far greater than the color of someone's skin or some genetic material.
Powerful, brother. After that, nothing else needs to be said. You've definitely blessed us here, on Infinite Waters Radio. It's been a tremendously powerful show. I definitely send much radiance, much serenity to you and your family and to the newborn. Really, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know time is of the essence, but I definitely feel what you're doing as well as what others are doing are definitely creating ripples. It's the butterfly effect, and one must never underestimate what they're doing, because you might save someone's life.
Yeah.
Someone might hear you might just turn around their whole life, and I definitely feel your work has touched millions of people around the world, so I definitely encourage you to keep on following what your soul is telling you. But definitely please just give information where people can actually see your latest work. I know you also have a flute album. Please just give the contact information also with your what else you have in the works, because I know that you've always got something up your sleeve. So please just give us your contact details and your upcoming events, and definitely once again thank you for diving with us into Infinite Waters.
Oh, and anytime.
It's been a great show.
Yeah, anytime. And your family and you've been very supportive of me, and I love you, bro. I love you. Thank you so much.
I love you. I love you too. I mean, keep doing what you do. I mean, I think, as I'm seeing it, where we stand now, there's so many people who are awakening, coming out of deep sleep and realizing that, like you said, we are cosmic beings. And it's comforting to realize that, you're not the only one who is doing this kind of work, and that's great, because many other people are also doing this kind of work. And I always say that together, we stand, and that's what it's all about. Unity. It's all about unity.
Yes.
And, people feel they can do things by themselves, but essentially the more you connect with people, the greater things become. I mean, if you look at the internet, which is a stargate in my mind, people are connecting, and this is only on one level, because still, people can't really talk to people in the streets. We haven't reached that stage globally yet, but it's coming. believe me, it's coming, because, like the internet, people are enjoying that they can talk to people. But still, when we can actually talk to people, that you go to your supermarket, you just talk to whoever you want. I definitely feel that that's around the corner, because, but please just give, give your contact details and,
My website is linenhonorfilms.com, LENONHONORFILMS. I also have a secondary website, linenhonor.com, LENONHONOR.com. And I'm actually doing a financial support drive, too, on linenhonorfilms.com. One of the things that happens is with these documentaries, I put in so much work and so much research and writing and editing and so forth. My family, we have suffered a great deal materially. So if there's anyone listening to this, if you're in a position to help out, please visit linenhonorfilms.com. I have a a PayPal button there. We would greatly appreciate it. I also have a P.O. box listed there. The Borg is in the Part 7A is also listed there. I'm working on Part 7B, which is the second half of that film. The first part is 2 hours long. The second half will be about an hour and 20 minutes. And I'm working on that second half, and I hope to have that done by the beginning of – early next month.
See, Lennon, that's what happens. I mean, the kind of material you put out, because it's so top quality. I mean, you go to other radio shows, they say, okay, what have you got coming up next? You know, and it's like you ask James Cameron that, and he's like, yeah, in the next couple of years. You know, with you, it's like they expect something in the next week. How long? You know, are you talking to Steven Spielberg? You're looking about 5 years minimum for the next film.
Yes.
You know, and it's just amazing. I think that's because people are so hungry for this kind of information.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring that up too, because a lot of the stuff that I see produced in Hollywood, it's of low quality. You know, it's really low. They may have like nice special effects and $1 million budget and multi-million dollar budgets, but ultimately, in terms of its impact, positive impact on humanity and uplifting the biological needs that we call the human being, it leaves much to be desired. It just goes to show you that, you know, we don't necessarily have to have a $1 million budget or, you know, pay people millions of dollars in order to you know, find a way of impacting people in a positive way. But it must be recognized and understood that we do need support on some level. Like, we do need support. And it does. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. You know, just to simply do editing, you know about this. Simply editing. I remember one time I was editing about a 15 minute sequence, and it took me the whole day. I mean, excuse me, a 15 second sequence, and it took me the whole day to get it done. Okay, and that's when I said to myself, "Wow, this. I mean, it really takes a lot of time." So, you know, part of it too is people. They are hungry for this type of information, and I'm doing my best, but I also need people's support so that I can continue to do this long term. Let me say this too, because the Borg is in the Part 7B, I hope to have it done by the beginning of next month. And then I'm writing a book called Deep in the Garden of Consciousness. And this is where I will open up more with the spiritual concepts or the I guess you can say the soul principles, if you will, getting into consciousness, getting into a spirit, getting into you know, soul beings and what it means in terms of the spiraling out of creation, getting into creation itself and getting into existence and the difference between existence and creation, the difference between God beings and the creator, etc. I'll be sharing more inside that book, and that's going to be my next project. As soon as I'm done with the Borg in the Part 7B, I'm going to be focusing in specifically on that particular book. And, of course, I'm doing radio shows, and I have links there on my website, Lennon Honor Films. I have a calendar. I also have an email list, so you can sign up to the email list, anyone listening in, and I'll send you updates each week. And then also I have a Facebook account under Lennon Honor, LennonHonor.
Well, Lennon, thanks again, brother, for taking time out of your busy schedule. And much love to you and your family. And, you know, definitely stay illuminated, stay high energy.
Yes.
Because this is, I always say, this is not the time to fall asleep, because we're living in the greatest times now, because we're living in the times where everyone is connected. So this is definitely not the time to fall asleep or even to give up, because this is it. You know, we're already here. So definitely thank you once again. And, thank you to everyone listening and everyone out there. Just remember to question everything, because we don't know everything. Once again, thank you for diving with us into Infinite Waters, and join us again for another episode.
Infinite Waters Radio.